Well, greetings to you all, and I hope you're all having a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles 2024. And I'd like to ask you if you feel blessed at all. Have you, in fact, ever counted your blessings? You know, even though it may not feel like it sometimes, especially in comparison to many people in the world who seem better off than us, we are blessed far more than they. You may know some people that have lots of money, and they may seem really blessed, especially when they say that they have been blessed and that God has answered their prayers. But how blessed are they really? And will they have all that money and their possessions forever? Sure, there are many people who have lots of money and lots of possessions. And we could assume that they are happy, right? But oftentimes they are not. Just look at the many famous people in the world today. Famous athletes, politicians, whatever it may be. So how are we more blessed than they? Now, we may not be more physically blessed, but we certainly are more spiritually blessed. We have been handpicked by God the Father to have the chance to be in his kingdom and receive everlasting life. We have more knowledge than the world when it comes to spiritual matters. And what the Bible has to say, because our minds have been opened. The riches and physical things could very well be considered a distraction from what is more important. And these physical blessings that the world dwells on now are only temporary. And that time will come when all these physical blessings will mean nothing anymore. Times will get terrible, and money won't be able to buy anything anymore. Notice this in Ezekiel chapter 7 and verse 19. Ezekiel chapter 7 and verse 19. We read, they will throw their silver into the streets, and their gold will be like refuse. Their silver and their gold will not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. They will not satisfy their souls, nor fill their stomachs, because it became their stumbling block of iniquity. The world as a whole is all about getting and not giving. Many people expect money as well and will get disappointed when they don't get it. And I came across an example that goes into this. For example, so two old friends, they bumped into one another on the street one day, and one of them looked worried, almost on the verge of tears. His friend asked, what has the world done to you, my friend? The sad fellow said, well, 3 weeks ago, an uncle died and left me $40,000. Wow, that's a lot of money. But you see, 2 weeks ago, a cousin I never even knew died and left me $85,000, free and clear. Well, sounds like you've been blessed. But you don't understand, he interrupted. Last week, my great aunt passed away. I inherited almost $250,000. Now his other friend was really confused. Then why do you look so sad? Well, this week, nothing. You know, in this example, the person was so blinded by riches that he didn't even care that his family members died. And this individual was clearly all about getting. Now, we know that we shouldn't be this way, but how can we prove that? You know, one reason is where we are at this very moment and what we are doing right now. We are celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles as it is commanded. And during this time, we experience a lot of giving, a lot of sharing. And it's certainly, and it's supposed to be, a joyous occasion. This is different than what we are used to when we are back at home. And this temporary time we experience now will be experienced in the future. But it will not only last for 8 days. It will last forever. What a great time that will be. Just imagine that. Doing this every single day, or being happy, being joyous. And have we all at one time or another had money problems? Maybe we have money problems right now. Those who don't have enough may struggle at times with spending habits and making sacrifices. Those who have more than they need struggle also because they may not know what to do with all that money, and then they can't even decide what to spend it on. Now, if this does refer to somebody I'm speaking to here or listening to me, then you have my contact information, and I will gladly share some insight about what you could do with your money. No, I'm just kidding. But again, have you ever tried to count your blessings? Have you ever realized just how much more blessed we are than not? If we live God's way and do what God says, there would be no reason for us not to be blessed, right? Yes, we go through trials because God tests us to see just how strong we are and just how willing we are to keep His law. These trials that we go through may be difficult at times, but as we read and hear about so often, they are not too difficult for us to handle. God knows that. Do we know that? Remember, if we get through these trials, we get rewarded for them with blessings. It may not seem like it right at first, but in due time, you will see it. And this is only the beginning. We will have blessings far more than we can ever imagine. Blessings that no one on this earth has ever experienced. Even the richest person on this earth. Or those who are just well off. How many people in the world today can really say that? At times it may be a little difficult to comprehend this, but history has shown through the Bible how several people have been blessed so tremendously, and all it took was faith in following God's instruction. Let's look at Abraham. God followed through with His promises to Abraham for what he had done. And I would like for us to put ourselves in his situation, in a position that he went through as we go through his life. So let us begin with Genesis chapter 12 and verse 1, where God starts off with a vital test to see if Abram was going to obey him. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. Now the Lord had said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you." Has this not happened to some of us? Have we had to move away from our parents when we were called, perhaps out of the country or out of the state, not knowing what would happen when we moved? Verse 2. God says, "I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing." Verse 3, "I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So, yes, of course, he would be rewarded for following God's instructions. Continuing verse 4. "So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan." Verse 6. "Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Moreh. And the Canaanites were there in the land," or were then in the land. Verse 7, "The Lord appeared to Abram and said, 'To your descendants I will give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And verse 8, he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So Abram journeyed going on still toward the south. As we can see, he did have faith in God in this matter. However, he was still human, and his faith was not as strong in other matters, as we will read next. And we have all been there before as well. Haven't we tried to put matters into our own hands rather than putting it in God's? Sometimes even forgetting about God at that moment. Not intentionally, for it is within our human nature. But notice in verse 10, now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. Came to pass, when he was close to entering Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Verse 13, therefore it will happen when the Egyptians see you, that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say you are my sister, then it may be well with me for your sake, and that I may live because of you. Verse 14, so it was when Abram came into Egypt that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. Verse 16, he treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Verse 18, and Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now therefore, here is your wife, take her and go your way. Verse 20, so Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. God clearly identifies Sarai as Abram's wife. Seemed like a good plan to Abram to obviously to save his life in this instance here, but obviously it was wrong. And he did it because of fear. Where was his faith and trust in God here? Let's continue on, chapter 13, verse 1. Abram went from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him to the south. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. See, he was very well off physically. Verse 3, he went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds with and tents. Verse 6, now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. Just imagine that. I mean, a lot of land, but they had so much possession and cattle and everything that they couldn't even dwell together. They didn't even fit. Verse 7, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock, and the Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Verse 9, is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left. So verse 10, Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. This here is showing Lot's character, acting on what he sees. Verse 11, then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan. Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. But, verse 13, the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, south, east, and west, for all the land which you see I give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Verse 17, arise, walk in the land through its length and its width, for I give it to you. Another promise that God was giving Abram. Verse 18, and Abram moved his tent, went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in the Hebron, and built an altar there to the Lord. Notice also that he had to walk to where he was going, just like our parents had to walk from point A to B. I'm sure they've told the stories about that. In their younger days, back in their day, they didn't drive because they walked in the snow, uphill, and barefoot. You know, I still say that to this day because I am now so old compared to the younger generation. So if I say this, then show how old I am, right? But point is, Abraham was very close to God. God gave him many promises of what is to come in the future. And he was blessed. Let's continue chapter 17, verse 1. Abram was now 99 years old. The Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, I am Almighty God, walk before me and be blameless. That means be sinless. And I will make my covenant between me and you and will multiply you exceedingly. Verse 3, Abram fell on his face and God talked with him, saying, as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be called Abraham, for I have made you a father of many nations. Verse 6, I will make you exceedingly fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings shall come from you. I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you in their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and your descendants after you. Also, I give to you and your descendants after you the land in which you are a stranger, all the land of Canaan, as an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And God said to Abraham, as for you, you shall keep my covenant, and you and your descendants after you throughout their generations. This is my covenant, verse 10, which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised. See, God is obviously very giving here, all the blessings that he is promising Abraham, but that's the key right there. In verse 9, that he should keep his covenants, keep the commandments, keep God's law, and all that is his. We understand, of course, at the conclusion of verse 10 there, where it says every male child among you shall be circumcised. We understand that today a physical circumcision is no longer necessary for us, as revealed in the New Testament in Acts 15 and elsewhere. And yet circumcision still exists. Only today it is about the spiritual circumcision of a true Christian. Notice in Romans chapter 2, Romans chapter 2, verses 28 and 29. We are going to come back to Genesis, so we'll go there right now to make that point that I was referring to. Romans chapter 2, verse 28. For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men, but from God. And also in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 3. For we are the circumcision who worship God in the spirit, rejoice in Christ Jesus, and have no confidence in the flesh. There's the distinction here between the flesh and the spirit. And also in Colossians chapter 2 and verse 11. In him you were also circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, by putting off the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ. So, now at this point, after everything God had promised, things that could not be comprehended in human terms, one would think that there was nothing impossible for God to do. In fact, all these things that he's promising is pretty impossible in human terms, but not to God. And even after all these things were said to Abraham, he still had doubt about other things, as we read now in Genesis chapter 17. Genesis 17, verse 15. Genesis 17, starting verse 15, God said to Abraham, As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. I will bless her and also give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be from her. Now, what was Abraham's response to this in verse 17? Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, shall a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? In verse 18, Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. Then God said, no, Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant and with his descendants after him. At this point, right here, that seemed impossible to Abraham, that God could do something like this, right? Continuing on in chapter 18, verse 10, he said, I will certainly return to you according to time of life. And behold, Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. So Sarah was listening in her tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord, being old also? Verse 13, and the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I surely bear a child since I am old? Sarah had doubt as well. Verse 14, so God asks, is anything too hard for the Lord? We can ask the same question in our lives and anything that we go through. Is anything too hard for God? At the appointed time, I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Verse 15, but Sarah denied it, saying, I did not laugh. See, sometimes even lying to God here is like, no, I didn't do that. But Sarah, did not laugh because she was afraid. And God said, no, but you did laugh. You know, we may sometimes be in a similar situation, forgetting how God continues to bless us, even through the most difficult trials. And sometimes you may even take things for granted. And as soon as a trial comes in or comes upon us, we start to remember more and more that only God can help us and that he blesses us when we go through those trials. Now, in this next example, we have Abraham talking with God, pleading with him not to destroy the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah in verses 23 to 25 of chapter 18. Chapter 18, verse 23, Abraham came near and said, would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? As if God wouldn't know that, right? But Abraham still asks that question. Verse 24, suppose there were 50 righteous within the city. Would you also destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous that were in it? And then right away, it says in verse 25, far be it from you to do so much a thing as this, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Far be it from you, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? A very bold question by Abraham, asking the Almighty, the creator of all and all the promises that he has given Abraham, a question like this. Abraham knew that there was nothing that God didn't know about, and nothing was impossible through him. But here we have a human being, a human mindset, wanting to remind the Almighty Father what he should do. Believe it or not, we also do the same thing when we pray sometimes, don't we? Especially if it's something that we really want to have happen. And we plead with God, why can't you provide this? Or why can't you intervene on this? As if God doesn't already know, as if God doesn't already have a plan in mind the whole time. We just don't know. We may not comprehend it, and that's why. And it's a human nature. It's human to ask these questions too. But we have to be careful how we ask, of course. Notice Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, verse 7. Ask, it will be given to you. Seek, you will find. Knock, it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds. To him who knocks, it will be opened. Or what man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Verse 10, or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent. If you then, being evil, referring to our carnal nature, our human mindset, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father, who is in heaven, give good things to those who ask him? Don't we try to reason with God when there is something very important to us for God to understand? God already knows what we think about, but he wants to see that we have faith in him. He wants to see our efforts and that we have a relationship with him. Abraham clearly had a relationship with God. And as the rest of the chapter continues, Abraham pleaded with God about saving the city. But then we read in chapter 18, verse 32. Genesis 18, verse 32. He said, "Let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak but once more. Suppose 10 should be found there." And God said, "I will not destroy it for the sake of 10. God already knew. But he's going along. He's very patient. He's letting Abraham ask these questions and see the kind of relationship that they had, right? In verse 33, so the Lord went his way as soon as he had finished speaking with Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. So in chapter 19, we read about how Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed because of the wickedness, and we all know that the same thing will happen again in the future. We live in an incredibly wicked world. The whole world will be affected. Here it was just Sodom and Gomorrah. But we're talking about the whole world being affected. In the next chapter, we see that Abraham still had not learned yet enough. And once again, he did the same exact sin he did earlier. This here should also give us a reminder how we continue to sin, even if we commit the same sin. It also goes to show us just how patient God is. So we see what Abraham says in chapter 20 and verse 11. Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. But indeed she is truly my sister. She is a daughter of my father and not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife." Now this was still allowed then, but not later, and it doesn't, no longer today. You can compare Leviticus 18, verse 9 on that. But in any case, this half-truth that Sarah was also his sister was a total lie, because it was not about her being his sister, but that she was his wife. And that was what Abraham concealed and then created a false impression through his misleading statement, and thus lied and persuaded Abimelech to take Sarah as his wife because she believed that she was Abraham's unmarried sister. Now, throughout Abraham's life, he had been tested. over and over again, just as we are continuously tested. And his faith would be described in chapter 22, verses 1 through 3, Genesis 22 and verse 1. It came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. He said, as God said, Take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Now, quite a test. A trial like this, any ordinary, let's say ordinary person would hear is like, forget that, I'm not doing that. But what did Abraham do? Verse 3, he rose up early in the morning and saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son, and he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Sure, certainly, there was a lot of things going on in his mind, things like, what is God doing now? But if still remembered what God had promised before of all these things, leaving a country, not knowing where he was going, putting his complete faith and trust in God, that he will lead the way and intervene on his behalf, wouldn't the same thing apply here? Different test? Well, let's continue in verse 6. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, took the fire in his hands and the knife, and the two of them went together. Verse 7, but Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, My father. He said, Here I am, my son. He said, Look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, and these are very interesting words he said here, My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. So he had an answer here that God would provide in some other way. He had some kind of an idea here, because he also knows what God will and will not do, as I will explain. And then continuing on, Abraham said, verse 9, Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order, and he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Verse 10, Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham, he said, Here I am. And he said that as God said, Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Verse 16, Oh, 15, the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, By myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven, as the sand which is on the seashore, and your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. All of this was a test. And God wanted to see if Abraham really loved God more than anything else, including his son and himself. God never wanted Abraham to actually kill his own son. And God will never require such a test of anyone today. Abraham knew without a doubt that it was God speaking to him. God had spoken to him on several occasions before. But on the other hand, God tests us spiritually in many ways today. But in principle, it is the same test. And we are tested a lot with even things that may be a weakness to us. And oftentimes that is a test that we go through on a continuous basis. And how are we tested in the same way that Abraham was tested? Well, notice Matthew chapter 10 and verse 37. Matthew chapter 10, verse 37. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. This may mean having to literally isolate yourself from these people, depending on the circumstances, especially when compromise comes into play. Abraham was willing to obey God unconditionally because he knew that God could not lie. And God had promised him that Isaac would have descendants. But at that time, he had no descendants. So God had to fulfill his promise somehow. And we will see in a moment what Abraham believed, how he imagined the fulfillment of God's promise. May not have all the answers right away. Did not understand why God was having him go through these tests at that moment, like with everything else that we go through. But then we later understand what God had in mind and planned all along. Again, Abraham was blessed. And if we follow God, we too will be blessed, but continuously. And even though Abraham was not perfect, he pleased God in many things. And he really proved to God just how faithful he was towards the end of his life. And God does the same to us to see if we can pass. And he continues to test us to see how strong we are in our hearts. Notice 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4. But as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, even so we speak, not as pleasing men, but God who tests our hearts. And also further in James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. James chapter 1, verse 2. Really a scripture referred to often. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Always remember what blessings will come out of it when we pass the tests. And as God promised Abraham, he promises the same to us. We pass the test, we will be rewarded. To summarize what we have learned today with Abraham, let us read Hebrews chapter 11, verses 8 through 12. Hebrews 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise, as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city, which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Verse 11, by faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed. And she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Verse 12, therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in the multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. A promise that went through. Verse 17, by faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promise offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. Verse 19, concluding that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Again, everything is possible through God. And Abraham believed that God would raise Isaac again after his death in order to fulfill God's promise of many descendants because, as we said, Abraham knew that God cannot lie. And since we also should follow in his footsteps, God promises the same to us in chapter 12, of Hebrews, verse 1. Chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. God has hope for us. His hope for us and the joy for him is to see us in the kingdom, to be part of his family. To conclude, turn to James chapter 1 and verse 12. James chapter 1 and verse 12. Blessed is the man who endures temptation. For when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. It says it right there. We endure, we will get the promise that he has for us. And this right here is a tremendous blessing for us, something that we should continue to strive for, and is indeed God's plan for each and every one of us. And we have been tremendously blessed thus far, having the wisdom and knowledge about his plan before anybody else in the world. How do we know that? Because we are keeping the feast. We have a sneak preview of what God has in store for the whole world and what he has in store for us. The time will come when we won't be able to count our blessings, because we will be blessed far more than can ever be imagined, and possibly far more than we can ever even count. Does that not sound appealing to us?